Hello again, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Sean and Al's Wrestling Podcast. Unfortunately, my co-host Al is not able to be with us today, but our string of remarkable guests continues. I feel like I say this every week that I'm honored to have the guests that we have on, but we've had the great Justin Shapiro, we've had the Cubs fan, and now I have the pleasure of talking with a man you might know as Mookie or Mookie Ghana or Chris Harrington, who has built the WrestleNomics Empire. It's a podcast that you can find anywhere where podcasts are found. And they also have a Patreon site that I recommend. I actually signed up for it recently and listened to the interview that you guys did with David Lagana, which was very entertaining and informative about everything going on in wrestling and social media and all sorts of things like that. So welcome to the show, sir. Anything else to add to that intro?
No, not at all. That's an exalted company for sure. I'm excited to be here, and I'm excited to talk a little bit about the financials and the business machinations happening in WWE these days.
All right, so I'm excited to talk to you about this because I've been trying to tell people that these TV deals that WWE just signed is the craziest, most ridiculous thing to happen to pro wrestling since WCW went out of business in 2001. And people, I don't know if it's because it ruins the narrative of how bad Raw is or how incompetent Vince is. It's like people are just getting mad at me, so I've just stopped talking about it, but I can talk about it with you. I feel safe. It's insane. You know, my reference point that I use here, I looked up the company's overall revenue 2009 through 2013. They were at about $475 million, $477, $483, $484, $508 million. That's what WWE was not too long ago. With these deals, when they go fully into place into 2020, they are going to add $300 million in pretty much pure cash profit to the company. So what I've been asking everyone, and none of us really know, but I'll just throw it out there to you, what in God's name is WWE going to do with an extra $300 million a year to play with, guaranteed for 5 years?
That's a good question. Obviously, you think about what WWE has structured itself as, and I would probably say the network conversion was the other kind of genesis point where they took their model and they ripped it up and they went in a different direction, kind of adopting OTT streaming stuff. So that was a difficult transition for them, and they've weathered that now. They've turned it from a money-losing segment to a money-gaining segment, but a very slow-moving segment. So first initiative, I think they're probably going to revamp their network. And so that will be costly because I think they're going to continue to invest in analytics. I think they're going to continue to invest in overseas marketing and a lot of other kind of what they call localization. And so, you know, languages, hosts, possibly shoulder programming, other things to try and make it successful. And, you know, we already know specifically they want to do a lot of that in India. We've heard about them already investing in Latin America. Obviously, they're in the midst of trying to make Saudi Arabia happy and try to do other stuff in the Middle East. So there's always going to be more focus there. And then there's the China initiative. And obviously, that's not really paying off at this moment, but it's something that they're trying to invest in. So that's also going to cost some money. So the first one I'd say is trying to do things with the network, create Network 2.0. And to create a tiered network where you're going to have an expensive tier, kind of the $10 tier of today, probably a free tier, and maybe even a mid-tier below the $10 tier that's only available on like phones and maybe would only have access to some pay-per-view stuff, but not the entire gamut of everything that they do for wrestling. So marketing that, developing that, rolling that out, and then turning it into a true e-commerce hub, that will be expensive, and that will be some of what they'll spend. Some of it will be spent on localization. Live events, you know, they have a dream to do more and more and more live events, and that's going to cost more money. That's going to cost more time and effort to make sure you can go around the world and do these kind of tours and support it. And that's basically what we've seen them do with their last TV deal, which is subsidize things like NXT, the Performance Center, and their talent initiatives around all the talent that they have under contract. You know, they have hundreds and hundreds of people under contract. And in order to maintain such a large roster, you have to be willing to essentially spend money just to lock people up. And we've seen them do quite a lot of that in the UK where essentially they signed all these people up and they had barely had anything to do with them beyond just mess with ITV and other people when they want to start their own Fed.
Right.
They're running talent initiatives to get Chinese stars, to get Indian stars. They ran the one in the Middle East. It seems inevitable that they're going to go towards Triple H's global localization program that he announced at the WWE Business Partner Summit this year, where he basically said, I want to make NXT kind of this territorial system. I want to make it where we'd have NXTs around the world. And specifically, he put up a map and he basically said, I think we should have one in Latin America. We should have one in India. We should have one in Asia. We should have one in Europe. So, you know, I'm kind of expecting they're going to have to kind of build not exactly five performance centers, but they're going to build five NXTs, and that's going to cost some money, and that's going to be a headache for them all to run. And then on top of that, you got to think, as a growing company, you're going to have to add staff. You know, if you think someone is working hard now to do visas, imagine when you're trying to run NXT and other company on other continents. You know, you're going to need more law people. You're going to need more immigration people. You're going to need more other people, background checks, everything else under the sun there. So that's going to cost them some money. Digital media, you know, they're obsessed with social media. They're obsessed with the idea of they always say, the co-presidents, George Berrios and Michelle Wilson, will say they wanted a land grab when it came to social media. And so what that means is you have to spend a lot to make sure that you're putting out all that YouTube content, that you're doing Instagram, that, you know, Up, Up, Down, Down is a WWE show. Xavier Woods thing. They pay people to be on that show. You know, they just did the father and son tournament with, mm-hmm. you know, different people. They paid those families to be there. You got paid to be part of that. So it's you know, these things are not free. And more, when WWE is doing more and more, it's always this push and pull between the talent and what they're asked to do and what they're getting paid to do. Because as quote-unquote independent contractors, that's going to be a challenge for them. And then you also have to expect there's going to be medical bills, there's going to be signing bills, there's going to be other things that are going to obviously recruitment costs that are going to be going into this. I think the merchandising is going to go way up, and to some degree that's going to affect them. I don't think they've given up on the WWE Studios model, so I think we're going to see them burn some more cash that way. When they, you know, there was a talk on the conference call where Michelle Wilson even said, oh, well, we're looking at maybe scripted dramas and scripted comedies. Ugh. And all I could think was, oh, geez, this is, you know, and they already do Camp WWE. You know how expensive it is to do an animation show? That's a long production skit.
I know. I always laugh when people talk about, like, is Brock Lesnar worth this contract? I'm like, how much more do they spend on Camp WWE? Don't worry about Brock Lesnar's contract. They're okay. They're going to do okay.
Exactly. And I mean, yes, WWE is kind of a unmonetary partner of the XFL. And so they're giving trademarks and IP right now to the XFL, to Alpha Entertainment. At some point, I'm not going to be surprised if WWE does, in fact, throw a little money in on that. They've always kept kind of a slush fund for investing in other technology projects, oftentimes that have nothing to do with wrestling. I mean, they invested in like kind of a Marvels or Avengers touring show at one time that Basil DeVito, who's an old time WWE executive, was on the board of directors for. Of course, they invested in Tout. Everyone remembers years and years ago. Mm-hmm. They've invested in other technology companies in Silicon Valley. They're obsessed with augmented reality and AR. So, you know, they're pitching stuff like that. And then you just go back to other places that WWE will spend money. Executives are going to get paid some of that money, and some of it is probably going to have to go pay back the debt. They borrowed $200 million in December of 2016.
Right.
So $200 million is a lot of money, and they have to pay that back. So some of it's going to go to that. Some of it could go to doubling the dividend. The dividend right now, you know, is whatever it is. I can't remember what it is, 8 cents a share or something, or 4 cents. And they would probably double that again, like they used to many, many, many years ago. Maybe they'll do stock repurchasing just to keep the price really high. I don't think that's where they're going to drive it. I think they're going to drive it more for other kind of initiatives. But, you know, all of that stuff, programming for WWE Network has never been cheap. And so it'll be very interesting to see what they decide to do with this. And a lot of it has come to, they're not quite a streaming company. They're not quite an entertainment company. They're kind of a live events oriented company, but they're in that weird mix now where you have to think a little bit harder about what is going to make sense for a company like that in the future? Is it, you know, what Netflix and Amazon are doing to try to keep costs down? What are they doing? They're buying content creators. You know, Shonda Rhimes gets a deal, or Robert Kirkman gets a deal where they literally go out and they basically sign you and then basically say, I want all the stuff you create to then show up on my platform. Is WWE going to start to do that? We don't know. So that's where, you know, my brain goes when I think about all this stuff. Now, you'll notice I didn't say very much about paying wrestlers a whole lot more. I yes. don't think it's going to trickle down all that much. And that's unfortunate, but it's also because of the dynamics and the reality of things right now is that, you know, they don't feel the need or the squeeze on a lot of people. But at the same time, you could sign the Bucks, you could sign Cody, you could sign Kenny Omega for pennies of what you'd be earning extra. I mean, I was saying if you give everyone a $100,000 raise, 200 people, that's $20 million. That's less than 10% of your increase. You can afford it.
Yeah, great answer, man. You get so many things that you went into there that I'm going to ask you about in more detail as we go along. To me, where my mind goes is that, you know, as someone who saw what they did with their profits in that kind of 2000-2001 area, and then I hear about how Vince is going to put $500 million into the XFL, I mean, they're not going to blow it all in the Football League again, are they?
No. I think a couple things. One, Vince gets tens of millions of dollars in dividends from WWE every year. Two, the $500 million number was a three-year number. So, you know, it's really more like $175 or $175 million a year. And in theory, some of that would be, in my opinion, offset by the TV contract that he would start getting. And he has, you know, the company's worth $5 billion. He has, was it 2.3 million shares or something? I think I figured out it was like 20% of his worth if he wanted to go and get plenty of $400 million at today's stock prices. So he has the ability to just liquidate some stock and have that cash on hand and spend it the way he wants to spend it. It's just a question of, will WWE kind of jump in bed with them, or is there enough what I'll call independent financial guidance now where they're going to see that that's a bad strategy for them to conflate the two? And hell, when you get a TV deal this big, maybe it makes it a good strategy because now it sounds like you're just creating more content and you're best friends with Fox Sports anyways.
Well, that's a great answer. Because, you know, I had kind of been wondering, you know, where is Vince going to get $500 million? But the way you explained that, I guess it is feasible. And at his age, why the heck not? You know, just it's a dream to run a huge sports league. And, you know, TV rights are what they are. And sports gambling is about to be allowed in so many states. So best of luck to the XFL number two. What do you think of this whole global NXT kind of project that Triple H is pitching, you know, NXT in China and India? Do you think that's something that can work?
I think it's a market by market discussion. I think in Europe, it's a very fertile ground and you have a language component and you have a bedrock that's pretty strong. So it makes a lot of sense to me there. What I see the NXT UK brand is being a playing card that you can drop from your hand in order to get Sky to pay a little bit more for their upcoming renewal. And it costs you very little because right now Sky's in a weird position where if they're going to do any kind of a renewal for WWE rights, you know, they could be paying a ton of money for a product that is eroded probably half of its viewership during its time on the channel in this last renewal. Mm-hmm. And so it's tough for Sky to justify why they want to spend more. And the only reason they spent more in 2014 is because they were bidding against BT Sports at the time. And I don't think that's happening this go around. So maybe the digital players like Amazon will push up the price, but otherwise WWE's in a situation where maybe they're going to have to announce that their UK deal is flat or down. And that's embarrassing. And that's bad for the stock price. So what do? You throw something else in the mix to make it seem a little bit better. So my theory is that the WWE UK show, NXT UK, is a way to kind of start that, you know, to push that forward and prove it, proof of concept, and then have something you can play to help that TV negotiation. So for the UK, makes a lot of sense. When you go to Latin America, there's so much talent in Latin America and Mexico that it's idiotic not to tap a market that's so close to the domestic marketplace that has such similar demographics to the Hispanic population here in the US, and to see what a terrible job they've done in building Hispanic stars in WWE. I mean, they're still trying to negotiate and get Rey Mysterio back. That should tell you about what a poor job they've done at creating new stars. And so, to me...
I do love Almas. I gotta say that.
Oh, yeah, he's doing a good job. And that's a shining example. And so, to me, it's just like, there shouldn't be one or two names that come to mind. It should be a dozen guys like that. And they should have that depth and that ability because it's such a developed marketplace and they're very popular. When you look at WWE Network numbers, they don't ever break it out by country, but the two or three times that they have broken it out by country, Chile is usually in the top five. And it's because it's ridiculously popular there. And so there's things like that. Brazil is such a huge untapped market for WWE. They keep putting it on their investor slide is where they want to go, but they never really make the effort to actually invest and do it. So they're starting by putting a couple NXT stars that are Brazilian there, but you're not successful by putting your toe in the water. You're successful by diving in, and it's tough because it's never going to be easy to get all those people to the United States and train them and teach them in English and do everything else. It's going to make a lot more sense to be able to keep them closer to home at a lot lower cost to you and then see what you can do with those people there. So I think Latin America makes a lot of sense. Does China make sense? Does India make sense? Does Middle East make sense? The Middle East one I see as a cash grab. Is basically Saudi Arabia as part of their Vision 2030 money is probably just throwing it at them and saying, hey, wouldn't it be great if you set up a shop here? And WWE saying, sure, we'll take your $5 million and come up with something. I don't really think it's that they think that's the future and that's the best place to be. I think they just think it's a great way to get some money, in my opinion.
Right. No, I think you're right.
Is India the future for them? Yeah, that's a good media market for them. And so there's possibilities there. Is Japan a good investment in them? It's a terrible investment for them. They would die trying to make their own NXT Japan. That's why I think it would be a lot more meaningful if they just tried to piggyback on like a NOAH or something where they just kind of use them as their own dojo and then kind of use that as a recruiting ground, similar to the way they treat Evolve or other things.
And they started a relationship there, sending Itami over Kenta to face Marufuji at his anniversary show.
Exactly. And to me, that makes a lot of sense because your goal in Japan is not let's go in and learn this marketplace and dominate. Your goal in Japan should be who gets it and is at a low enough level that if we partner with them, we can boost them up just enough. And we can benefit greatly with little investment on our part. China, it's a crapshoot. You know, I look at what's happening in OWE, the Oriental Wrestling Entertainment Company that the Dragon Gate guys are running right now. And it's fascinating because it's this like completely different style of pro wrestling. But at the same time, it seems like an imitation of wrestling. And people have said that, you know, culturally, Dave Lagana talked about it on the show. They did not even seem comfortable watching the wrestling matches because the type of conflict and heat that they were developing didn't seem to work very well. And so there's those questions about does a kung fu drama translate to pro wrestling entertainment if there's not a background, a history, a cultural understanding of this? And so I'm not so sure that's the best place to go. And to me, rolling out seven of these at once is a recipe for failure. So I think you should go UK. That makes sense. I think you should do Latin America next. That makes sense. And then number three is wherever you can probably make the best deal that's going to be cheapest for you, either India or Middle East. And then if you need to do a pseudo NXT out of Japan, sure, what the hell.
So you have really opened my eyes to some crazy, huge decisions that the company needs to be making in the next couple of years here. What do you make of the current WWE leadership? It seems like they finally settled into a couple people that Vince likes with George Berrios and Michelle Wilson. Do you think Vince has taken a step back and letting them run things? They were the two on the conference call the other day. Is Vince still as involved as ever? What do you think of current WWE leadership and their competency, I guess?
That's a great question, and that's one where obviously – you've heard me talk, you know the show. I rant and rave about WWE leadership all the time. And it's tough to say whether they're doing good things or bad things because, you know, it's the long game sometimes where you can criticize them for 20 decisions, but if in the end they get a big TV deal, then they seem like they're vindicated. And it's very difficult to talk about missed profits or opportunity cost. So who do we have on top? We got Michelle Wilson. We have George Berrios. Both have been with the company for about a decade. Michelle Wilson actually worked for the XFL back in the first incarnation. She worked for the tennis, either LPGA or tennis. I can't remember which. I think it was tennis for a little while and then eventually landed in WWE and has been there. And, you know, you're in Vince's good graces till you're not. Donna Goldsmith who was the former chief marketing officer, has lots of stories about, you know, her being with the company and she was a high up person there, and then she got on the bad side and then she was gone. And yep. some ways people would say, you know what, that's just how it is that if you know that your name is not McMahon and you're never going to be the chosen one, you can maybe succeed. And in some ways, George has kind of done that, because George carved himself out a niche where he said, I'm going to be the guy that investors trust and investors want to talk to. And if you talk to George about wrestling, I've heard him say things like Sean Rollins. You know, he is not a true heart wrestling hardcore fan, but he knows financial talk. He knows how to talk to analysts, and he's learned the OTT strategy. And he wants to talk about the idea of being a streaming powerhouse and content creator and social media monetization guru, and India's the future and China's coming up and everything else there. And so he's got all the buzzwords. And so I appreciate that about him, that he's so forward looking. I'm terrified that basically WWE is going to sink their money into terrible Silicon Valley doublespeak in an attempt to get credibility, when they should just be investing in their core product and their core, you know, what works for them. Right now, they are trying harder and harder to run more live events every year. And they've monetized themselves by pushing up the ticket prices more and more and more. And at the same time, they're making more profit, they're making more revenue, but they're not necessarily getting more attendance. And I think that's going to come to bite them in the ass. And so my question is always, is there somebody in that management team who's still doing the Vince McMahon, I care about ratings, I care about attendance, I care about merch sales, I care about the fundamentals, to explain, is this getting more popular with people or less popular with people? One thing about Vince McMahon a lot of people don't realize is that when he talks on investor calls, he's brutally honest, to the point that the market overreacts to him, because he will say things like it was a failure, or is a swing and a miss, or whatever it is. And they're so used to CEOs who mince words and try to speak, you know, kind of corporate double talk, that Vince sometimes can be so brutally honest that it can almost kind of shock people.
Yeah, I remember that SummerSlam that Daniel Bryan and John Cena had, and I guess the buy rate wasn't as good as they said, and he called it a swing and a miss, and I'm like, oh, darn.
Yeah, and so it's...
I was hoping that wouldn't happen for Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, and so it's just that sort of idea to say, you know, the challenge is there someone there whose mind is still thinking, what am I doing to make the next generation of fans, and is that the right thing? And before people just say, oh, well, there's Paul Levesque there. Paul Levesque has matured into a business position, but he was not someone who came up with a business background. And he's talked a lot about how, you know, when he wanted to do the Performance Center, they said, okay, put together an investment case. And he was like, what? Because he didn't know how to do that. He wasn't coming from that background. And he would never have been a person that investors or analysts would have trusted to run the company. He is now matured into a much more... A myriad of roles, and he's becoming more of a professional in this sense. But I still think he's got a ways to go before he's going to be in that kind of Harvard MBA league that a lot of people are expecting. So you have George and you have Michelle, and a couple of years ago they were on the rocks. This TV deal didn't succeed as well as it wanted in the domestic sphere. That was largely seen as kind of their failure, is my impression I've heard. And so they weren't in a great position for a while there. And you could almost argue that getting the WWE network to stabilize, getting these new TV deals in place, that's what cemented their new legacy of becoming these co-presidents of WWE. And if you think about it, there hasn't been a lot of people who've been elevated that high.
I love what you said about having someone who really still understands the fundamentals of the pro wrestling industry. To me, I'm someone who's been reading The Observer since 93. I have back issues going into the 80s. I love attendance. I love live attendance. I think it's the most honest thing. You know, there's been so much discussion over the years about TV ratings. I don't think that's a fair way to evaluate things, pay-per-view buy rates. I like tickets sold. And correct me if I'm wrong, you know, in this transition away from Cena and a somewhat unsuccessful coronation of Roman, you know, they've dropped about 10%. But things have pretty much held steady for about 13 years now, right?
Yeah, I mean, the revenue numbers have gone up and down, and a lot of that is actually going to be driven on, was it U.S. or was it international? Last year, live events in North America grossed about $115 million. You go back maybe 5 years, that number was $72 million, and that number 5 years before that was about $62 million. So, I mean, they've gained a huge amount of revenue, but they've done that by driving more and more and more shows. Internationally, it's about $33 million. You go back maybe 5 years, there's maybe $30 million. You go back 5 years, there's actually $41 million. And so you've seen two different trends happen with live event attendance, which is the UK got hot, Europe got hot, Europe got not. And so when they, and same with Latin America, there was a couple of years they could make a lot of money in Latin America, then they made less and they stopped running it very much. So there's been that give and take. In the US, they keep trying to drive more and more and more live events every year. And so we're getting back closer to the numbers that we saw like in the dying days of the 80s, where you're doing lots and lots and lots of shows, and you can make a profit at a house show with 1,200, 1,500, 2,000 people. You don't need 5,000, 600, 6,000 people there to make a profit, but you're doing a volume model. You're not doing a large venue every time model. That said, they're going to run three stadium shows this year on three different continents, one in the US, one in Saudi Arabia, and one in Australia. That's incredible.
Well, let me ask you this then. You did talk about the money made on house shows, but I mean the money they make on house shows is going to be quite small compared to the TV rights and the network. And when you think about the wear and tear on the wrestlers' bodies from working 4 nights a week and taking hard bumps, and you go to a WWE house show, they work hard. Would it be wise to maybe cut back on house shows and give these guys a little bit more of a rest?
So, I mean, right now, maybe $172 million on live events and $270 million on TV. In 5 years from now, it's going to be up to maybe 475 on TV and maybe $225 million on house shows, you know, or and televisions. Maybe more, maybe 250. But that ratio is definitely going to change. I would never call it peanuts because it's always going to be pretty big. Then you get the question of what do you do about wear and tear on people's body? When New Japan decided to run one third more shows, which they did about 2 years ago, the number of house shows and live events that New Japan ran went up by about 33%. What did they do? Well, they basically booked most of their guys to work more multi-man tags.
Right.
The percentage of singles matches remained about 15% of the top guys' workload. So you still had to work a couple more singles matches. But the majority, 85% of the other matches that were added were multi-man tags. The problem is in the US, we don't really run that model. And so it's very tough because if you're a singles wrestler, you're doing singles matches every night, everywhere you go. And you could argue maybe it's going to come from the fact that they're going to have such a big roster that the volume model is going to come more from having an A team, a B team, a C team, and a D team. Maybe it's going to come from actually rotating guys to 9 month shifts where you get, you know, 2 months off, and then, you know, you have that chance to kind of have more downtime in that recovery period, almost like an off season for them will help these guys kind of stay strong. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, go back to the days of the 80s. You know, guys were working lots and lots of shows then. Guys in the 70s
A lot
worked
of chin
lots and
locks
lots
in
of
those,
shows.
a lot of chin locks in those 80s WWF shows, though, man.
Yeah, that is true. It's a
A
very different style.
lot of Gorilla Monsoon having to make things interesting.
Yeah, so it will also come from, you know, better travel. It will come from better medical care and better ability for guys to be able to work out and do things on the road without being so taxed. And so it really does come down to the fundamental definition of calling people independent contractors, because you can improve the working conditions for those people, but you have to treat them like employees, and that's going to be a very difficult transition for WWE ever to weather, and it's not going to be one that they will probably do willingly.
How about this angle? How significant is it that they are going to be back on major broadcast, network TV for the first time since the days of the Dumont network? And it seems like Fox is all in, and Rupert Murdoch personally called Vince. How significant is this partnership?
Well, I think I'm fascinated that Fox was willing to put the big checkbook out, because I really thought they could get SmackDown for about 50 cents or 25 cents on the dollar for what they paid, because USA was already had it in their head that they couldn't get both shows, and Fox is giving them such enormous exposure. It almost boggles the mind that you would have to pay premium to get SmackDown, right?
Right.
Now, maybe you could argue that by paying the premium, you're driving the message to them that they can't deliver a substandard show and that they have to put the A-list talent, the A-list angles to continue to be available to the Fox network.
Weren't there rumors, though, that they actually had offers from, like, the Amazons or Facebooks of the world, but turned it down and going with something with more exposure?
Yeah, and I think that's exactly why, is because I think Fox really was pissed off at UFC. And so when WWE came and they said, you know what, we could take this money that we had kind of allocated for UFC, and UFC kind of scoffed at us when we offered them $200 million, and instead we can give it to WWE, and we'll have a brand that actually wants to market itself, a brand that has shown some ability to rejuvenate its star power. I don't mean they've done a great job building stars, but they rejuvenate their star power in the sense that there's a roster, there's depth, people come up, it evolves as time goes on. They have Ronda Rousey, this enormous big star for them, and she's a name that all these executives know and they care about. So I think it's an example where, you know, Fox, it seems like they really want to go all in. Now, 1 year into this deal, they might feel very differently about it. Does Fox end up getting NXT and putting in a SS1? Do they do a studio show? Are they going to, you know, are the football announcers going to smirk and roll their eyes every time they have to plug SmackDown?
They better not for that money.
Exactly. That's going to be we say for that money, but, you know, that's chump change to the NFL.
True.
But yes, I think Fox Sports themselves hiring WWE, and that was an important distinction that I know Dave was making, which was it's not Fox, it's Fox Sports that decided to invest in this. So it says a lot that Fox Sports thought it was worth their money and their time to do it. So I think from the ability to promote, Fox is an enormous platform. George always said he had three goals with this new renewal. Number one was kind of the economics of the deal. Number two was the ability to, as he said, deepen in the engagement we have with our fans, meaning he didn't want it to be something where, you know, the fans are going to be out there being like, well, how the hell am I supposed to watch that? You know, WWE on access. Well, you know, half the country doesn't have access. And number three was to find new fans, to grow the fan base. And I think the Fox deal is perfect because it does all three of those. It has good economics. It has a good, deepened engagement with its fans. But number three is the big one. It's on broadcast television. It's like SmackDown. You know, that was probably the last time it was on broadcast television. It was back in the UPN, WB days.
And how about the fact that, you know, it's kind of hard to say which show is the priority because USA is paying them, you know, $70 million more a year. But Fox is such a huge exposure, and the idea of Joe Buck plugging SmackDown during Packers versus Cowboys is crazy. How do you see them, you know, attempting to allocate talent? Right now it's very clear that Raw's where Rousey is, Lesnar, when Goldberg came back, Braun, all these people. How do you see that playing out when they do have two shows that they pretty much have to treat as the A-show?
Well, I think for sure we're going to see certain stars be allocated to Fox Sports if they think it's going to be a big deal. So I do expect to see Ronda showing up there on the SmackDown brand at some point. I think some of it will be if, you know, they've never – I know we say one is the A show and one is the B show. But if you ever talk to Vince, he would not exactly feel that way. Now, there are times that he seems like he'd be kind of a why are we giving this away type mentality. But there are other times that I would say he would always say it's a brass ring. Whoever wants can grab it. And he, I think, has always believed in his heart of hearts that it's a fair game. It's open season. Either team could win. Now, I don't know if that's true. I really don't think that's true right now. But there's something to be said that I think he's always believed that it's supposed to be a competitive landscape between the two, and both of them should be bringing their A game. So it's very possible we'll see that. What I think is going to be the challenge for WWE is more and more we're seeing it, I won't say cluttered, but there's definitely a concentration of older wrestlers that are still on their roster. And so it'll be like, will Big Show be on SmackDown in the year 2022? Or, you know, maybe if he's going to wrestle Shaq, maybe he will. You know, that might be a big enough thing that's worth promoting. We'll have to see.
And just as an aside, how about the fact that after 12 years of hearing about UFC doing pro wrestling better than pro wrestling and all of their spectacular successes and WWE being left behind in terms of relevance, Vince McMahon freaking won again somehow. The guy just can't be beat. according to Meltzer, once these deals go into place, WWE is going to be bigger and more profitable than UFC.
It will probably be more profitable than UFC, partially because UFC has enormous debts that they're paying off, and they're paying off for them using pay-per-view and their TV deal. So, you know, when WWE's coming in with almost no debt, with the exception of that $200 million they borrowed, you know, of course they're going to be in a much, much better position. On the profit, on the revenue side, yeah, I think UFC overplayed their hand a little bit. And I think that in some ways, WWE swooped in and got some of the revenue that UFC kind of ran away with. That said, it has to do with timing. Look at how they timed their events last go around. They did international deals, then they did the network, then they did the domestic deal. Well, by doing that, they set a standard for what they were going to get on the international deals. They then did the network and upset all their domestic partners. And then they went to all these domestic partners, and those domestic partners, a lot of them got scared because of the international deals. So this time around, they did it completely opposite. They did domestic deal first, international deal after that, and then they'll probably reformat the network somewhere in between those two. So it's also timing, you know, where UFC did a really good thing of not burning all their pay-per-view money all at once, the way WWE just kind of threw it to the sharks and said, I'm done with this.
Interesting, interesting. So let's kind of end on this topic, because this is a big question that's very divisive. I'm someone who kind of does believe in pro wrestling trickle-down economics, not getting political. I'm just kind of using that as an example. You know, when Triple H made NXT the prestige brand 3 years ago, people thought it would kill the indies, and now the indies are doing better than ever. With WWE having all of this money, is this going to be good for the rest of the industry, or is it time for the rest of the industry to be really scared?
I think WWE will always say the reason they're called WWE and not World Wrestling Entertainment, though technically their name is World Wrestling Entertainment, is because they view themselves as a multimedia entertainment brand, content creators. And so they've never, I think, thought about, I have to dominate wrestling. I think they've always wanted to be seen as, I want to be, you know, like Muppets or Star Wars or something else, which is revered as this high valued brand. And so it's tough to say, is it good or bad for wrestling? I think it's always good, because think about New Japan. If they could get 1/10 of the deal that WWE had, they would probably double their profits.
Yeah, and do you think there's a chance we get someone trying to make a legit number two in the same way that the MMA boom, you know, spawned a Bellator or Strikeforce?
Well, but I mean, did it really spawn Bellator, or did a company decide to create a Bellator?
Right.
I mean, so there's that element of it too, which is it's a lot of times it doesn't always spawn it as much as a mega corporation decides to play and invest in it for their own purposes. So I don't know whether New Japan is going to benefit from that the way that, say, you know, if an Amazon or a Facebook, I was talking to Brandon about this yesterday, my co-host on WrestleNomics Radio, which is, if there was ever a service that said, you know what, I want to get in bed with wrestling, but I want international appeal, and you know what, those wrestling events are going to be on at a weird time in another country, so showing them delayed or with my younger fan base is going to be different. It would make so much sense for New Japan to make a deal with a Facebook in the U.S. or an Amazon in the U.S. because it's the right demographics, it's the right time, and you don't have to worry so much about it being quote-unquote live versus the amount of friction that they have created right now on their OTT service. And so a lot of times it comes down to not necessarily what did WWE do, but what are the executives at this other company doing to understand the changing media landscape today? Wrestling is always 5 years behind the curve when it comes to really getting the cool new stuff and really thinking ahead. And so they've done okay on the social media front. But even still, I see other opportunities for people that are forward thinking to actually develop something that's going to be big. Is it good or bad for wrestling? I don't know. I can't believe anything short of when WWE gets a lot of money, they don't necessarily go out there and try to crush all their competition as much as they go out there and try to blow it on stupid things like WWE Studios. So it's so hard because so many of these people are so worked up about the idea that, you know, they're not being perceived as entertainment behemoths and that they're going to these tech conferences and they want to be respected there. And so it's like nobody gives a damn if you're bigger in wrestling tomorrow. but they give a damn if your OTT service is got the coolest thing, or the Wall Street investors think that you're a cool stock. So I don't know if it's ever going to drive them so much about they have to crush the entertainment competition. You know, I'm surprised we don't hear them say, you know, I put the circus out of business, you know, things like that, where, you know, they just talk about other entertainment companies that have failed. But, you know, a lot of times with Vince's mindset, it's about the future and it's about the other things. And, you know, the fact that Netflix wants very little to do with them probably is what irks him more than anything in the world now, even though that Facebook wanted to play ball.
Fascinating. I love it. You know, things have been just too steady and predictable for the past like 13 years. Things are getting crazy again. I think it's going to be good for the industry. I could be wrong. I think I don't know. We'll see. It all starts October 2019. But I want to thank you so much. Boy, I'm tired. Like, you, man, you just brought a ton of amazing content for me to think about. I thought that was one of our best shows. Again, that is Chris Harrington. You can find them at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. They do a phenomenal job, as you just heard, of breaking down the business of professional wrestling and why everything is happening. I don't think you can get that level of analysis pretty much anywhere else. So any last thoughts, sir?
Just if you have anything more to add, always hit me up on Mookie Ghana, and congratulations on all your podcasting success and your guests and also your shows that you've been producing here. It's good to have more people kind of being, like I say, content creators in the independent wrestling media world.
All right, man. Well, thank you very much. And that'll do it for this episode of Sean and Al. We'll be back in a few days covering everything happening in the world of professional wrestling. Thank you very much.